Welcome to the DermVet Podcast. I'm Dr. Ashley Bourgeois, a board-certified veterinary dermatologist practicing in Portland, Oregon with animal dermatology clinics. I'm also a mom of two, just trying to find the balance like everyone else. Let's learn to ditch the itch, cytology, everything, and make derm more fun than frustrating. Well, this is the first episode of the podcast I am recording since getting back from the ECVD, the European Congress of Veterinary Dermatology, which was held in Gothenburg, Sweden in the beginning of September. And I just have to say that conference was amazing. So much good information, so much good research. But I was flabbergasted at how many people came up and told me that they really love the DermVet or they listen to the podcast all the time. It was just amazing, you know, putting out this content all the time obviously does take a lot of time and consistency. The podcast is almost 4 years old, which is crazy, but it would not exist or keep going if it wasn't for all of your support. And I really wholeheartedly mean that. There are times, especially being in the clinics and having two young kids and, you know, trying to be there for my family, my husband, that it can be a lot to continue to put stuff out there too. But then when I hear that support, that it's helping people across the world, it just fuels me to keep going. So I did feel the need to shout that out because I was just so excited and surprised to see how many people across the world are listening to the podcast. You know, I can always see little numbers and data points, but it's different when people come up to you and really tell you how much they enjoy it. So for that, it is never lost on me that all of this really continues to happen because of your support, you continuing to listen to it. But let's get to today's topic. So I know you're really here for that and not just to listen to me, you know, blubber on with all my emotions of how much I appreciate the support. I wanted to touch on vasculitis. There was actually some really interesting lectures about vasculitides at the ECVD. It is really interesting disease process. So I just wanted to revisit some of the basics about this disease. You know, what's difficult is vasculitides, or this umbrella term of ischemic dermatopathies, is just that. It's a big umbrella term. There's lots of different types of vasculitides that can exist out there. And we only know to so much the degree of categories that we can place these diseases in. So a lot of times when we say something has vasculitis, it's a pretty big term. And that gets a little bit to schematics because we're really going to treat them all very similarly. But when you hear certain things like, you know, ischemic dermatopathy, there can be genetic forms of that. There can be vaccine-induced vasculitis. So there's just so many different things that can feed into that. So just to put that out there. So vasculitis in general is inflammation of the blood vessels. And what happens is as all these inflammatory cells come around, there's lots of different nitpicky ways of different mechanism of action that this can happen. But in general, when there's inflammation that happens, no matter what those cells are around the blood vessels, it causes that blood supply to be compromised. And then what happens is naturally our blood is meant to bring a lot of oxygen and nutrients to different organs, and that includes the skin. So when we have that inflammatory process that's around that blood vessel, you compromise the blood vessel from being able to do its job to bring all those nutrients, to bring that oxygen. So essentially, you get areas of hypoxia, and we're going to talk about some of the clinical signs, but we do know that traditionally, a lot of these areas of the body, the distribution of vasculitis, tends to be at a lot of endpoints. Classic example being the pineal tips, right? The ear tips, because you don't really have collateral circulation from other portions of the body to make up for the inflammation happening to those blood vessels. Tip of the tail is another area that we see affected. Claws falling off. So, you know, when we talk about SLO, symmetrical leukoid onychodystrophy, that claw disease, you know, there's some vasculitic component that likely happens with that. So those are areas we see because you don't have that collateral circulation. Now, of course, there's other areas of the body we see in really bad cases. Like I've seen them affecting the entire body, the face, the trunk. that's not going to be as typical compared to those endpoints, but we do know that is a problem, and that's why we see that typical distribution. There's also a lot of reasons that vasculitis can happen, which can be difficult. You know, if it is a very straightforward vaccine reaction, vaccines are meant to stimulate our immune system. If we stimulate the immune system, it doesn't happen in the right way, then obviously that can compromise those areas if a certain drug is started. But sometimes we don't really know. You know, some of these signs can happen weeks, months after a certain insult. And we can't definitively say, oh, yes, it was this. And unless we treat it, get it resolved and re-give that, which most people don't want that provocative re-challenge, sometimes we're not sure. Certain infections have been reported. There's autoimmune cases where we can get little vasculitic changes. We know there's even reports of neoplastic things that can cause vasculitic changes. And a lot of these cases end up being idiopathic. We don't really know why it has happened. We can't really look at the history and definitively find a trigger. It's just kind of occurred, and our biopsies have showed us that. So it's really nice if we can find a trigger, because obviously we can try to take it away and not have that pet re-exposed to it, but it can be really difficult in a clinical setting. More acute signs of vasculitis. Sometimes we don't necessarily see right away in the dermatology clinic, because they'll often see the general practitioner first. But if something had just happened acutely, you'll see erythema to certain areas. You can even see ecchymosis, necrosis, ulcerations. What we tend to see, at least in a specialty practice, unless they're already a patient of ours, is alopecia, scaling, you know, still some erythema, hyperpigmentation, because it's been going on for a bit of time. But it depends on when the process has started, what clinical signs that you'll actually see. And again, a lot of times it's that endpoint that we see because of that collateral circulation being affected. Another place I want to mention, I know we talked about the ear tips being very common, the claws, the tail, paw pads. So we actually can see paw pads, little punches basically out of their paw pads from vasculitis. I have had some pretty crazy cases that have affected the nasal plenum. So if the nasal plenum becomes depigmented, ulcerative, then vasculitis could be something that we see as a reaction. I have also seen in cases where we are pretty heavily suspicious of rabies vaccine-associated vasculitis, that right rear limb will just have a patch of alopecia. And so that's something that if you see just a non-erythematous, non-pruritic area of alopecia on the right rear limb, because that's where rabies vaccines are usually placed, and the dog's not affected otherwise, or you're seeing other signs of classical vasculitis, I would ask owners for sure. And you want to get a good history anyway when you're talking to a case of potential vasculitis, because you are looking for any triggers. Have they started, you know, there's even food that's been reported. Have they started a new food? Has there been a new supplement given? Is there a new drug that they've been started for some reason? You know, we've seen certain antibiotics, certain NSAIDs that have been reported. Have they had been vaccinated recently? So if you see an area of non-pruritic, non-erythematous, just kind of alopecia on the right rear limb, I would definitely be asking and trying to get vaccine records just to see if it lines up potentially as a form of trigger. Doesn't mean it's bad, but it's just a side effect that we can see. What's difficult about vasculitis is really traditionally the most optimal time to biopsy would be pretty quickly. So you would try to biopsy with them like, you know, within a couple days of the lesions happening. But that can be really difficult for owners to catch that quickly and bring them in. What we'll see is a lot of inflammation around the vessel walls. It can be really subtle and transient, and you want to make sure you have a dermatopathologist really look at them, especially if it's more chronic, because sometimes the really, really typical lesions on biopsy can be difficult to pick up on if it's not very active. They'll look for thick, hyalinized, edematous vessel walls. They're going to see if the vessels look a bit washed out. So these are all things that we'd want to consider. It can be really difficult, especially if you have a case that is more penile tip, to want to biopsy them. It can be a little bit scary. You could do something like a wedge biopsy in those cases. There are some people who will kind of treat without biopsy if it really seems that suspicious, like something like pentoxyphylline. But if I'm not able to control them with a more benign medication and the owner is willing, then I do try to biopsy them. You could do something like a wedge biopsy. You could do even a shave biopsy if you're really nervous about bleeding. I know I've still punched some of these. I just do a more superficial punch and I kind of put my finger on the other side of the ear to feel when it's going through. You know, once it starts hitting cartilage, I don't really need to go deeper. But you can successfully biopsy these penile tip margins if you need to. And if you're nervous, certainly referring them to someone like a dermatologist to do it would be reasonable. Or if you have other areas of the body, I've had pets where they come in and the penile tips are really affected, but they have an area of alopecia on the dorsal head, so I'll just biopsy that and not mess with the ear tips. So there's lots of potential ways that you can utilize that. Treatment, lots of different treatment options. You know, clearly if there is a cause we can identify, then we try to take it away. If it is a medication that they maybe have started, we try to discontinue it. Clearly, if they had like cancer that popped up at some point, is it removable? So we do want to try to identify the cause if it's possible and remove it. We usually try to defer vaccines if we can in these cases, writing letters to the county if we're able to, go do titers and avoid them being revaccinated because we know it can cause them to re-flare. Traditionally, pentoxyphylline is kind of that mainstay treatment. And that is a phosphodiesterase inhibitor. The idea behind pentoxyphylline is it's making those red blood cells a bit more flexible so that they can kind of penetrate into those areas better. In mild cases, I will just start them with the pentoxyphylline, and a lot of them can do really well. You'll see anything from 20 to 30 mg per kg. You know, it's traditionally a 3 times a day medication. I have had some success twice daily if it gets really difficult for owners to do 3 times a day. The really nice thing about pentoxyphylline is it's pretty benign. There's really not a lot of side effects we see with it. I very rarely have had a dog who's vomited on it, but in general, they tend to tolerate it really pretty well, which can be nice. Some of these more severe cases don't respond to pentoxyphylline alone, and that's where you can really start going through your immunosuppressive medications. So, of course, you can use things like glucocorticoids in certain cases if you need to. Depending on the severity of the case, you might be the more upper anti-inflammatory dosing versus immunosuppressive dosing, you know, 1 mg per kg a day or 2 mg per kg if it's a really bad case. You know, try that for a period of time and then taper depending on how they're responding. You also see reports of things like doxycycline or minocycline, depending on availability, in niacinamide, and that's something that could reasonably be tried. If you are in an area that has a lot of ticks, then certainly running tick titers would be not unreasonable because we know that certain ticks can also cause vasculitides. So ruling that out can be really, really helpful. And then you get some severe cases that do need a lot of immunosuppression in other ways. So I have had really bad cases that occasionally have need to do something like azathioprine. Azathioprine, you want to be really cautious with. It can cause bone marrow suppression and cause liver enzyme elevations. So the medication itself, when you start it, you have to check lab work about every 2 weeks for the first 2 months. So the drug itself is not that expensive, but the monitoring can be very inconvenient. And obviously, I have had dogs who have popped up their liver values and we've had to stop it. And that's about 50 mg per meter square that you start out with. You can do 2 mg per kg depending on the size of the dog. I like to do the meter squared version dosing if I can. And then ultimately, you could utilize something like cyclosporin. So I've had some success in these cases with cyclosporin as well. If I felt like it was a reasonable drug to try, you still do the 5 to 10 mg per kg daily and kind of assess their response. Sometimes I'm still having them on steroids when we start those medications just to use it as a steroid sparing agent. And if I'm getting a good response, then I can back away. And then the last thing I want to talk about, and this is off-label, but luckily I can talk about things that are off-label since this is my podcast. We're seeing actually a decent amount of success with Apoquil. So I have had cases of vasculitis do really well with Apoquil. A lot of these cases are ones that concurrently have atopy. So they're already itchy from their atopic dermatitis. Plus we have vasculitis. And I've had quite a few cases actually do quite well with Apoquil. Sometimes I've had them on steroids to start out initially and then taper them off. I've had some where I've just been able to start Apoquil. Now, I have had cases I've had to keep on the off-label dosing twice daily, more long-term. And that is something we want to be cautious of because it is off-label. So I usually do lab work more often in those cases just to look for things like, you know, anemia, liver value changes. Most of them have done pretty well, but it is something that I make sure owners understand it's off-label. We're going to do more lab work just to look for any side effects. But I have gotten a decent amount that, you know, if we do a month or two on that twice daily dosing and they do really well, we'll try to lower to once daily. And quite a few have actually done quite well. So it is an off-label use of it, but I have seen some success and I've heard many other dermatologists have some success with this as well. So just something that I want you to recognize as a potential treatment option. And, you know, we have success and failures with all of these. I've had vasculitis cases that have done great on Metoxy and that's it. You know, I've had a focal case that did great with topical tacrolimus. Great. That's awesome. You know, I've had some that have to be on steroids. I've had some that need cyclosporin. All of these medications, I can list successes and failures. And that's just the reality of medicine. But it is cool that we're able to utilize other ways of, you know, these more traditional allergy treatments if we do see reports of success in the literature. So I hope that's helpful for you, just kind of an update on different treatment options we can consider for vasculitis. Like I said, some of these are really mild cases that are pretty easy to manage. Some of these are really, really tough and really severe. I mean, I've had a dog whose face was completely almost melting off from vasculitis. So it can really vary how severe they are, how many medications they need, and how much they respond. A good amount of my cases do end up staying on some form of treatment lifelong. We hope to keep it to something like pentoxifilin, but I've had some who have to stay on other forms of treatment lifelong too. If we know the inciting cause, I have occasionally had a dog that could come off of treatment. And then, like I said, you have to be really cautious about vaccinations. In a perfect world, you defer their vaccines if you're able to. If there's a situation where you can't, then you really try to make sure that they're up to date with treatment, that they are not getting more than one vaccine at a time, because you're just trying to make sure you spread out the insult of that immune system being activated. So, little update on vasculitis. If you have any questions about it, always feel free to reach out. But hopefully this is an episode that you guys find helpful.